Ladies and gentlemen, traveling friends and foragers, my name is Jared, and with me is my very friendly friend, Anna.
That wasn't redundant at all. I'm just so friendly.
That's true. We will be your hosts for the episode. We are honored and grateful that you have joined us at our table. Here at the Game Table Podcast, we take a look at various board, card, and other tabletop games. We give an overview, provide a little insight on how to play, and share some of our thoughts, all in an attempt to give you an idea of how well it would fit for you and your table. Today, we will be looking at Wild Gardens, designed by Isaac Vega, artwork created by Alyssa Minold, and published by Rose Gauntlet Entertainment.
Wild Gardens is a game inspired by real-life foraging, where players use action selection to forage a variety of ingredients, cook up some delicious dishes, and make new friends by sharing what you have made. There's a variety of choice and style that allows you to tailor your foraging experience in the gardens of the wild to be the one that will leave both you and your guests satisfied. Does this game satisfy well? As well as a nice cold glass of wild raspberry soda?
Yum!
Join us at the table to find out as we discuss. All right, Jared.
All right, Anna.
Since we all know that I have the most foraging experience at the table, I'm going to ask you the opening question first.
Oh my.
Our listeners are on the edges of their seats.
I hope not.
And they're probably driving. So you need to get them to sit back and share with us what has been your greatest find whilst foraging.
Wow. We're going to make me set the bar.
You are. Very good. Yes. Go ahead.
Well, some people don't know this because I don't advertise it because some people think it's gross, but once upon a time, Anna and I did not make a lot of money. We, in fact, made hardly
no
money at all.
That's not the same thing.
Oh, it is.
It's not,
foraging.
It's not. Oh my gosh.
So, for those of you that don't know, I have a background as a youth pastor. I was a youth pastor for 10 years. We served at a small church that could not pay us very much money. Almost all of my pastoring career was bivocational. And a theology degree does not help you in making a bunch of money, which is okay. No big deal. But sometimes you have to supplement that by doing some crazy things.
Especially if you're trying to pay your wife's way through grad school at the same time.
Oh, that's so true. What a hard time. We were shown how to dumpster dive by some friends. So we made friends while foraging.
We did.
Just like this game has inspired us to do.
I'm cringing.
It was usually in the winter months because everything would be frozen and everything would be just fine. Listen, I can see your faces as you're listening to this. And I had the same perspective. I get it. It wasn't, I don't know that I would do it again. Well, you know what? I'm okay with how we handled it.
I was going to say, we would like wear gloves and protective equipment and bleach everything that came home.
And we were very careful about what we found. But there were a couple of things that I found that were just over the top incredible. And it was in those moments that I just was like, okay, you know, this is not too bad. I remember once, it was the dead of winter. That's a board game joke for the designer listening, of course. We found the place had thrown out a perfectly full package of meat. It was fully frozen. There was nothing wrong with it. It was delicious. I will never forget that find because up until that point, you know, you're finding vegetables and you've got to pick out like one rotten one in the bag because that's why they threw it out. And you'd find fruits with the same story. You'd find bread that had gotten smushed and no longer looked pretty. It was stuff like that, right? So you're always like trying to make do with what you found. But man, I don't know. It was close to the expiration date. It wasn't even expired. I couldn't believe it.
No, it had like 3 days left or something.
Yeah, it was wild. Yeah. We went home and cooked it the next day. It was great. I know this is not normal foraging, but it was such a great find. And for the time in our lives that we needed it, it worked great.
I thought you were going to tell them about the cake that we found, because we'd find cake that
the top had been kind of smashed in
and so the icing didn't look pretty, and then they'd throw away this entire cake.
When we found that, that cake was awesome. We ate that for days.
That was very fun.
That was so cool. I remember we found a table one time.
Oh yeah.
It was like the box had gotten damaged, and so they threw this table out and we got a whole table. That was awesome
too. That was my gardening table for a long time.
So we did that for a while. Even after things got better financially, we did it for a little bit, until one day I
found some live meat.
I did. I was deep in it. It was just me and my buddy. I was in the dumpster and it was really dark. He had walked away with the light to go put some stuff in the car and came back. While he was gone, I put my hands up on the side of the dumpster to pull myself out. And there's this big possum that's just staring me in the face. And I look at him and he looks at me and he goes, and I about peed my pants. And I was like, all right, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. And that was the end of my dumpster diving experience.
Well, for those of you that are listening, I just want to summarize that Jared gave up dumpster foraging as soon as it turned into real foraging that involved live plants and animals.
No.
That's what I heard right then.
No. This thing made it very clear that I was in its territory.
This is my dumpster. Move on, buddy.
When I'm sharing with the possum that's about to ready to eat my face, I think I'm good to call it.
Oh my goodness. Wow, you set the bar.
You did not think I was going there, and I love it.
I am terrified that you went there still. I don't know what to do now.
Oh, I love it.
All right. Well,
that's a big part of our early marriage, babe. I can't just ignore that.
No, you can't.
All right, your turn. What's your greatest find while foraging?
So foraging actually has been a part of my life my whole life.
Sure.
I remember being a kid and being taught by my parents, even the little like weeds that would grow in the yard.
Yeah.
Like which ones you could like pick and suck on or chew on because they were sour, or like chewing on mint leaves and things like that because they were spicy. And so that was fun. So I feel like I've always kind of had my eyes open. I wouldn't say it's until adulthood that I started actually studying books, which I mentioned because that's a part of this game.
Sure.
If you're going to be a really master forager, you do have to do some research. But probably some of my most fun finds were when I was a kid. We lived in Pennsylvania for a good chunk of my childhood, and things just grow in Pennsylvania. So I don't know if we have any out-of-state listeners.
I think we have some out-of-country listeners as well.
Well, there you go. Yeah. So I don't know how things grow where you guys are located, but in Nashville, Tennessee, you're fighting with bugs. You're fighting with really rocky soil. But in Pennsylvania, the soil is beautiful and everything grows there. And so we would go out into the woods. We'd go out into all sorts of things, and we'd find corn that had just blown there or grown there. There's all sorts of soybean fields, corn fields, wheat fields all over Pennsylvania. And so we'd find whole areas that were just growing up, and we'd come home with corn or we'd come home with wheat or things like that, which was really, really fun. But probably my biggest one was, I remember we were walking and finding this huge old apple tree.
That's cool.
It was so cool. And it was right at the right time. And the apples that were dropping. Now, we had two apple trees in our own backyard.
Sure.
But they were not like this apple tree. This apple tree was like as tall as a 3-story building. Mm. It was like old and gnarled. And it was dropping apples that were literally like as big as my head as a kid.
Wow.
They were huge and they were crisp and delicious. And so I remember marking it in my mental map. Like, I have to find this apple tree every single year. And there were a couple apple trees that we found, actually. And we would go around apple picking season. And if they were on somebody's property, we would ask, like, hey, are you going to do anything with your apples? Can we pick some off the ground? They were like, fine, usually. And if it was not on somebody's property, if it's just in the woods or whatever, we'd just go and pick them. And I remember we came home with boxes and boxes and boxes of apples. And my parents were like, what are we going to do with these? And so we decided we were going to process them. We were going to make and can applesauce. And I did not check this with my mother. So this number might be higher than what I remember. Mm. But the number that is in my head that I remember is we ended up canning 130 jars of applesauce.
That's nuts.
It was insane.
That's wild.
It was insane. We ate canned applesauce, like big quart mason jars of applesauce for like 3 years.
Yeah. And what choice would you have?
Because of that. So then after that, next few years, my mom was like, let's try dehydrating the apples. Let's try doing this. Let's try, because we were just still eating the applesauce from the years before. Anyway, it was very, very fun and a wonderful taste as a child of going out in nature, finding things, and then cooking, making something out of them that we could enjoy and be proud of, which is just what this game is about.
Sure. So at the risk of storytelling going way too long compared to what we normally do, I wanted to share one more story that both you and I experienced from the other end of this game's perspective. So we just talked about both of us foraging and reaping the rewards of that.
Yeah.
But the other part of this game is making friends along the way and sharing and experiencing what other people find. And the closest thing that I think we can get to with that is a really cool little experience on our honeymoon where we're in Kauai, Hawaii, as we're going off to go do one of these hikes that we wanted to do. We ran into this local farmer who had the most delicious mangoes in all of life. And it did ruin mangoes for me forever. But man, sitting over the side of the clifftop, getting to reap the reward of this guy's mangoes, like, it was just a great experience. And I will never forget it.
Yep. And we made a friend.
It was good.
Yeah.
All right, Anna, we're going to talk about how to play this game in just a second. But first, I wanted to go ahead and do a quick shout out to our designer. After we get done with the how to play, we'll do the artist on the other side. How does that sound?
Sounds like a plan.
Great. So this game is designed by Isaac Vega. He is famous for creating Dead of Winter, which we have discussed on this podcast before. Isaac is a great game designer, but an even better storyteller. I don't know how he does it, but he is the common denominator in all of his games that does this. So I assume he can just take credit for it. But in that storytelling, Isaac has a way of finding an artist that 100% matches the stories that he's trying to tell, whether it's Dead of Winter or even in Ashes, the game that he made, or in this game, Wild Gardens, and so many others that he's done. The artist that he finds really has a cohesiveness with the story that he's trying to tell. So one of the cool things about this game that we're going to briefly touch on later, but I'll go ahead and mention now, if you want to, there is a solo mode or even a thing that you could do together. You're still playing it just one player, but to go through an experience where every traveler has a story blurb and there's this full solo scenario booklet where you can go on a journey with specific travelers and trigger different story points. Another game that Isaac's made is Forgotten Waters, which is just chock full of great storytelling moments. So if you are into story, whether that's through the art, just the little bit that you're going to get through a character's abilities, or going through a full scenario set, this is going to be the game for you because Isaac once again has brought all of these things together into a nice package. We will have a link for Isaac in our description. Please go check out more of his work. So now, Anna, how do we play this game of Wild Gardens?
Well, and I'm glad that you mentioned the solo mode because I'm going to be mostly talking about the gameplay of a multiplayer game.
Sure.
So the goal of this game is to have the most points at the end of the game and thereby the most successful foraging trip. Players score points through three different methods. Either they can move their token up the pollinator track, move their token up the jar track, or get in-game scoring various traveler abilities that they feed along the way. The whole game consists of two big foraging trips that you and your opponents are going on, and each trip lasts 3 days. So before you go on a trip, you're going to draw a card. It'll describe what trip you're going on, and it'll have certain events that will happen at the start of each day in accordance with the trip, usually some bonuses or things like that that you can have. When you set up the game, you're going to have a board that has a path around it, and there are these permanent stops along the path where you can forage different delectable items, such as mushrooms or greens or flowers or herbs. There are many, many different ingredients that you can forage. You'll also, at the start of the game, lay out recipe cards, which have the ingredients listed that are needed to make that recipe. And you'll lay out guest cards, which you can invite to your gourmet wild garden picnic. Each guest is listed with certain types of food that they desire. You cannot feed them at your picnic unless you cook the food that they desire. You will have a player board that lists actions you can complete on your turn. And you will also have turn markers that are labeled with the numerals 1 through 4, and one wild that could be any numeral from 1 through 4. On your turn, you're going to take one of these markers and you're going to put it down on the action that you wish to take on your turn. The number on the token is the number of spaces that you will move your person around the path before you take the action. So you want to plan these numbers carefully so you get to the spots that you want to forage or the spots that you want to cook or feed people. Once you use a 3, you don't have another 3 until the end of the day. The 3 actions that you can do are you can either forage, which means that after you land on a space, you can collect 2 of the items that are surrounding that space. So each space has 3 different items around it. And so you can either collect 2 of one of those kinds or 2 different kinds, but they have to be touching the space that you're on when you land. A second action that you can do is you can either cook a recipe or invite a guest. It's the same space to move your token down there. For cooking a recipe, you would trade in the ingredients that you have that fulfill a recipe card, and then you would take that card and score the victory points on that card. To invite a guest to your picnic, you must be at a picnic table space, and then you also must have a recipe cooked that is the type of recipe that that guest desires. Then you would turn in that recipe, you would take that guest, and that guest would be a part of your team. And guests have certain bonuses that you get. They might have victory point bonuses, or they might have text bonuses that give you extra ingredients or extra points or things like that at the end of the game. The third action that you can take is to research in the library. So off to the side, there's a little library. It's got books that are all the different colors of all of the resources. And so whatever space you're on, you can take a book that matches the color of one of the resources touching the space that you're on. Then there's bonuses that are next to that book that you can get. And then those bonuses will let you do extra things whenever you take certain actions. And it's important to note that there's only space on your board for 2 books. So after you get 2 books, you will have to pay a resource to return a book before you can get another one. So that's the basic gameplay. There's a few free actions that you can do and some things like that. But that's basically what you're doing until each person is out of their player tokens. Then that's the end of the day. Each player will give up a token to get a round end bonus that is specified on the trip card and dependent on the token that you give up. Then you will start the next day, get the benefit that's also on the trip card, and the rounds will continue again, but this time with 1 token less than the previous day, because whatever token you commit to the round end bonus stays there. After 3 days, your trip is done, you get all your tokens back, you draw a new trip, and you do it again. Then after 2 trips, you will add up the number of victory points that you are on the pollinator track, the number of victory points you have on the jar track, and any game end bonuses from customers. And the highest score wins and gains ultimate bragging rights, because that means that you are the best forager and the best chef and the best friend.
Basically everything you want to be in life.
I mean, really, really good bragging rights. There are several themed expansions that we'll talk about a little bit later. They do not alter the gameplay, but they do add in a lot of fun new characters, ingredients, and trips that are around the theme of the expansion. All right, so let's get into discussing this game. Jared talked before the how to play about the designer, and I want to talk a little bit about the artwork in the game. I actually got to meet Alyssa Minold at Gen Con. In fact, we are on a nickname basis now, so I call her Liss because that's what she goes by. I'm sorry that you got her name wrong before.
I'm just not as cool as you are, I mean, suppose.
You're just not as close as I am.
Yeah, I mean, you know, maybe someday.
With Liss, yeah.
She and I can go dumpster diving together.
Oh, no. Poor Liss.
Just kidding.
Anyway, yeah, she did a fantastic job at Gen Con. I loved getting to meet her and looking at the art. It was kind of fun. I actually complimented the art, and then she was just like, oh, I'm the artist. So that was kind of fun. It really is. The art is phenomenal on the cards, on the recipes, even on the guests that you can attract, because some of the guests are actually reminiscent after people that you might recognize in the real world and give certain bonuses. I was noticing as I was going through the deck, there is not a repeat ingredient card in the entire deck. So the ingredients are divided into categories.
Yeah, so there's 8 categories of type of ingredient.
There's 8 categories of type of ingredient, but like each of the flower cards were different. There might be a violet. There might be a, see, I'm going to run out of flowers that I know that are.
Wow, we made it through one.
There might be a clover.
Oh.
There might be a dandelion. See, we're good. I was just put on the spot a second ago. Anyway, there might be all these different types of edible flowers. And so if you're just looking at the card category, you're like, oh, this is a flower. I need a flower for an ingredient. But take time to appreciate the artwork, because not only is every ingredient unique, every ingredient is drawn in an artistic way, but it's drawn in a way that you could recognize it.
Yeah. And I would just go ahead and say, I don't know how you couldn't take time to appreciate it. Also, there needs to be a warning label on this box that there needs to be snacks ready at the table, because
it's so true.
I was hungry looking at all this stuff.
It's so true. The recipe cards look delicious.
They do.
But the ingredient cards is what I'm saying. Like, you could look at them and recognize it. So, I mean, a card came up. I didn't even see what it said. And I was like, oh my goodness, that's chicken of the woods. Or, oh my goodness, that's a dandelion.
Yeah.
It was drawn well enough that you could recognize the ingredients. And every single ingredient on the card are actually forageable in North America and actually edible.
There was lots of research done.
It was so cool.
I've heard that they inquired actual foragers who do this as a living or whatever. So it is very much inspired by actually getting to go and do this, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And the recipe cards, I'll mention too, just because they were very beautiful. Like Jared said, they made you want a snack. It made me want to cook every single recipe card that we came across, pretty much. Yeah. So I feel like even if you've got any friends that aren't too into gaming but are into foraging, I feel like they would really enjoy this. They would feel like they're benefiting, learning, and enjoying it. So it might be a way to kind of get them to sit down at the table with you as well. So anyway, thank you, Liz. We really appreciate the artwork. And that was a huge draw of this game and just enjoyment throughout the whole game, admiring each card.
So with that said, Anna, what's the draw?
Well, I mean, obviously the draw for me is the foraging aspect.
Sure.
And we've gotten a couple of foraging games solely for the fact that they are foraging games before.
Yep.
And I would say that this one definitely has the best put together gameplay. That there's a real game there that you're playing, real strategy, a variety of different strategies you can employ of any of the games that we've played for foraging. So,
yeah, I mean, when I first saw this game pop up on crowdfunding, I thought, okay, they're foraging, they're cooking, and they're making friends. So they've just summarized Anna in a nutshell. Aww. Of like her favorite things.
These are my favorite things.
That's right. And I had to get this game. I was very excited to get it. I always love finding games that you and I can enjoy together. I think for me, it was so much fun just going on a journey of finding the various ingredients, deciding how I was going to use them, and then seeing the different people that I could interact with along the way. I thought it was so cool. I mean, and like I said, with, you know, just Isaac's games in general, just allowing space for that narrative to take place, even if it's not necessarily right in front of you. There's not, in the multiplayer game, there's no game blurb. You know, you've got to kind of just feel it yourself, but it still very much felt like I was walking through a narrative of me just taking a couple of days to go on this journey. And I really appreciated that.
All right. Well, Jared, what would you say was your favorite mechanic as you were going through this game?
I think this game wants to have a very low barrier to entry. And when games do that, I like to kind of shift my lens a little bit for what I like the most in that game. I love in a game like this where it's all about, we're here to have a good time, tell a cool story, enjoy what we're doing. I love beginning of round abilities where it's just like, hey, everybody's going to get a little bit. It's going to let you get started. And then you can kind of decide from there how you want to work your path. Every day or round, you get it at the beginning of the round ability. And for me, it's not anything revolutionary. It's not anything crazy. But for this game, it fits so well because I went from looking at the board and saying, how do I do this? What do I want to do? To all of a sudden, oh, I've got these ingredients because that's what day one gives me. Cool. I've got, okay, now I can do this. And they can do that too. But that's okay because I know what I want to do now. And then at the other end of the round, I also appreciate you've got to give up one of your action tokens for the rest of that trip, but you get a cool bonus. And sometimes getting a better bonus requires giving up a token that you don't want to get rid of. And so I like that tension of deciding, is this bonus worth what I'm getting out of it? What about you?
Well, that's interesting because it didn't even cross my mind talking about mechanics, the end of round and the beginning of round things. Because I don't even think I really paid attention to those until probably the second trip. I was like, okay, oh, this thing is going to happen again. Like, and I didn't even like remember that it was going to happen. The second trip, I did pay attention. I think I did better with choosing my end of round. Sure. And saving the ingredients that I needed to get the good one that I wanted and like things like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I just really, like I said, I like things that kind of help guide players that are not necessarily hardcore gamers without it getting in the way. Like this gives you a thing and then it gets out of the way to let you still decide what you want to do.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. I would say that my favorite mechanic is the flexibility of the game. When we started the game and I'm sitting here trying to be like, okay, what exactly, how does this play? Because sure, some games where you're collecting ingredients and trading them in for things that then trade in for another thing, they have to be very precise. And you've got to pick just the right thing and get it before the other person does because they're saving for it too because it's obviously the best thing on the board.
Right.
And you've got to make sure that it all stacks perfectly so that the one bonus that the one person gets you gives you just the right amount of resource to swoop in and buy the next one and this, and you got to like plan it all out really, really carefully. And I didn't know if this was going to be that precise of a game, and it is not that precise of a game. Like Jared said, I think it at many different points in time, I could just kind of look at my resources, look at what we've got and be like, okay, what would be the next best move? You didn't have to plan a lot of moves ahead. You could. There were a couple of times where I did plan ahead and say, oh man, if I get this guest, they give me extra resources, which would then let me buy this other card that needs a bunch of that type of resource. So you could do like a little bit of stacking abilities like that, but you didn't have to. It didn't have to be that precise. You didn't have sure to plan so far ahead. It had a lot of flexibility to be able to you didn't have to decide on your strategy out the gate and then just stick with that. You could change along the way and the game still played perfectly fine. And I think would still be enjoyable too. I think it would be enjoyable for people that like to plan out, you know, moves that can stack and kind of build on each other. And I think it could also be enjoyable for people that don't want to play like that and just want to be like, okay, what do I have? And oh, I just need one more research to get that. Let's do that next. So that was my favorite part about it.
Adding to that flexibility, I was just, while you were talking, I was thinking about, and you get 6 recipe cards that are face up at all times.
Yeah.
And so you can kind of see which ingredients are hitting multiple cards to give you more flex where even if somebody else takes something, you're still okay.
Yeah. And the guests, they're not wanting specific recipes. So you don't have a guy that only will eat dandelion pancakes, for example. But you'll have a guy that will eat a breakfast item.
That's right.
And so if somebody takes the dandelion pancakes you've been saving for, chances are another breakfast item is going to come up and you could still get that and still feed the dude that you wanted to get.
No, I think that's a good choice. And I think it's interesting because I've looking on the Board Game Geek forums and this game is still very fresh. So there's not a lot of content there yet, but one of the things I've already started seeing is people saying, well, this is an obvious strategy. And like they would propose just the one strategy. I don't know, though. Like I really felt like in the times that we've played that there was flexibility to kind of choose, do I focus here? Do I move over here and do it this way? The game's also going to change every time. And so while it's likely that I'm going to find this thing to implement the strategy, it doesn't necessarily guarantee that. So I like the flexibility in deciding to play different ways in different games and still being able to be competitive.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. Because I don't see how you could just pick one strategy and then be like, oh, this is what I'm going to stick to for the rest of the game, because the game changes with the players that flip up. Or no, sorry, with the guests that flip up and with the recipes that flip up. And I remember one game that we played, the first like trip, I feel like, did not have a lot of guests with jars.
Mm-hmm.
And jars are an important scoring mechanism.
Jars are huge.
And it was insane to me that in the second trip alone, I was able to get several jars. I find certain cards that let me go ahead and score the jars, because the jars don't score by themselves. You have to have an event in the game that mm-hmm. scores the jars. And I was able to score them. I got my jars all the way up to where I felt like the break-even point, because there's a certain point where there starts to be just like a ton of jars and the jars will usually skip numbers, but then they don't.
Right.
So I got my jars all the way up to the break-even point, not even focusing on jars for the first trip and only doing it for part of the second trip. So again, I think usually a strategy would be you want to go ahead and get your jars up because that contributes to your end-of-game score. But I didn't even do that for half the game and still ended up fine at the end.
So that kind of segues into why we chose this as a two-player game. So we can go ahead and talk about player count for a second here. I love this game at two players because it feels like even though I'm competing against you, I still got to go on this journey with you through the park or whatever it is that we're going through. And I feel like when there's more players included in that, it's still fine. Like, I still enjoy the game, but then it becomes more crowded. And I already felt like cards were going quickly, even just in a two-player game. And then so in a three or four-player game, they're flying.
You'd have to reshuffle stacks in a three or four player game, because we got most of the way through the stacks just in a two player game.
That's right. And I understand that, like, we just talked about flexibility and, you know, you can kind of adjust as new cards flip up. But maybe I really want to make dandelion pancakes, and being able to do that requires that the card sits there for just a minute while I get the ingredients, where it might not in a higher count game. So that's why I wanted to bring it to the two top. I think that it's very enjoyable at two. I don't know that it adds too much more at three and four. Obviously, I like that option for it to be there, but I don't know that it's needed. I think it's a fantastic date night game. I think it's great to just have a relaxing game that still has a gamery feel to it.
Yeah. Well, another thing to note about that is you can't share spaces. And so if the board gets more crowded, so the way that it works is when you're tracking your movement around the board, you actually skip spaces that other characters are on and you can't share a space. And the board is flexible in that there's a couple of places that the path splits, so you can go different ways, but it also has arrows where you have to continue going around the path. So that would also limit your spaces that you could go to. There'd be more spaces blocked.
Yeah.
And we would say that even in a two-player game, there were times that we blocked spaces that other people wanted. So it get a little bit more, I think, it gets a little bit more cutthroat with three and four-player because you can block people and everybody can see all the cards that are available. Everybody can see the guests that are available. Everybody can see the resources that you have in front of you and could potentially steal recipe cards, things like that. Now, again, there's flexibility.
100%.
You can go for another recipe card. It'll be fine. But yeah, the amount that happened in a two-player game would only very much increase in a three to four-player game.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm not the forager of the two of us, but I will say usually there's not a lot of people in the same area foraging at the same time.
I was going to talk about that, actually.
And I feel like with the three and four player games, I've lost that feel a little bit and it's turned more into a game instead of a journey.
So since you brought that up, I'll go ahead and say this thing that I've been thinking about. Okay.
Sure.
And that is that when you first told me that this was like this game where we were all going to go out foraging together, I was surprised because that's actually not usually my experience with foraging.
Okay.
I'll go with the kids or I'll go with you or I went with my brothers when I was a kid, but it's not usually like a big party event that you would go and everybody would go out and go foraging together. I think we talked in previous podcasts that I got into foraging over COVID.
Right.
Because I would go jogging and hiking with people usually, but when I was by myself, I paid more attention to nature and I noticed more things and I looked them up and I realized they were edible and things like that. So that was interesting. But I have to tell you, I was kind of happy with the gameplay around that because I felt like it was a little bit more like you're together in this area, but you're each going off trying to find your own things.
Yeah.
And to be honest, like that felt a lot more realistic to me than both of you going and trying to find the same things.
Mm-hmm.
Because often if you go out and you find a mushroom, you just found a mushroom and it's your mushroom and there's not like mushrooms for all that are in the same area. I don't know if I'm making any sense, but
no, I think it does. Cause like you said, you can't share a space. And so you kind of have to go off and find your own thing. And so you're never really truly interacting with each other. You're just getting the chance to show off what you've made later on to other people.
Yes.
And that usually doesn't always happen on the trail. But I think it's cute the way they did that here.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But yeah, I would say that that part of the game was a happy surprise to me because
mm-hmm.
I was thinking, how are we going to have this group foraging game? How's that going to work? And then it's like, no, it is a little bit like
yeah.
how it would actually be.
Sure.
Where you're both in the same place going on this trip together, but you're having your own foraging experience around each other.
That makes sense. And it's funny too, because that kind of plays into the 3 and 4 player argument against, because it is both realistic and just as annoying, where I think if you find multiple foragers on your path, you kind of get bummed out because you're like, oh, there's no path. There's nothing left for me.
Yeah.
And obviously you want to share, you don't want to just hoard it all for yourself. But you are trying to find your own space as well. And those spaces go away with more players.
Right. Yeah. There's only a set number of picnic table spaces where you could go and serve a guest. Resources are distributed around the map randomly mm-hmm. at the start of each trip. So you'll reset them once during the game. But some of the resources, there's only 2 of that type on the whole board. And they could accidentally fall to where they're both on one space.
Yeah. I don't like that.
And then if somebody's in that space and you need a garlic, you can't get it.
Yeah. I get it. It's one of those things where it is both realistic and I'm just like, I don't want to cross the board to go find mushrooms. I want mushrooms to be over here so I can finish up what I'm doing because everything else I need is over here.
Right.
But it's just part of the game.
Yeah. Well, and that leads into the, do we feel like there's cons or things that were frustrating
sure.
about this game? Too. And so do you feel like that would be a con or frustration that the resource distribution is entirely random to where resources can group like that or not?
I mean, I could have missed it in the rule book, but assuming there's not anything in the rule book that says you can't have 2 on the same trifecta, I wish there was something that prevented that because there's nothing that keeps you from being able to already take 2 of the same thing.
Yes.
So like if I'm in an area with 1 mushroom token, I can just take the token twice because it's representing a cluster of that type. You're not taking that specific one. So there's no reason for 2 to be there other than for it to be annoying. So I just wish that there was something in place that said, okay, you can't have 2 of the same in any triangular area. But I don't know. Other than that, I just don't know that I have a whole lot of complaints. Like, I enjoyed the journey. I am not good at this game, but that almost felt secondary to just, I don't know. I enjoyed getting to find garlic with Pierce, and I enjoyed, you know, getting some free ingredients from Jade and going on all these different, you know, little story moments. I thought it was cool. And, you know, going to upgrade my skills by going to the library. Like, all of it just felt very much like a fun activity to do. And it was, there was still a game. Like, I was still very invested in trying to win. And so for me, I think as long as you're okay with that lighter experience, but there's still choices and there is a slight amount of player interaction because sometimes people do take your stuff. They might take your space. There was multiple times, you know, especially because you only have so many action choices. There's multiple times where I'm like, Anna cannot take this spot because if she takes this spot, it ruins everything for me. And so there is a little bit of interaction, but for the most part, you got to understand you're coming into a little bit of a lighter experience. And if you can do that, then I think you're going to really enjoy this experience if you're interested in the setting at all.
Well, I have a big complaint.
Oh, here we go.
Are you ready?
I guess.
I wish that I didn't have to discard my recipes when I fed my guests.
Oh, no.
Because what I would love is to be able to... I mean, even if I just discarded them into my own discard, and maybe you can check the rules or something. I don't know.
Well, I think the idea is, you know, we're talking about those higher player counts. You want to have a discard pile that you can shuffle everything back in. You're going to have to reshuffle.
That's so true. Well, one thing that this game kept me from accomplishing was displaying and publishing my Forager's cookbook at the end with all of the recipes that I had discovered and cooked.
Sure.
And that just would have been really cool. That's all I'm saying.
Dang.
Yeah.
No, that totally makes sense. I get it.
I was like, every time I had to discard a recipe to feed somebody, I was a little bit heartbroken.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I want this recipe so that I can show people I made this recipe.
So I feel like in a two-player game, you could 100% house rule it where you hold on to that stuff. I think it's totally doable.
We can't house rule big issues with the game, Jared. We need to let the designer know. No, I'm just kidding.
All right,
I'm just kidding.
Isaac,
just kidding.
You've been put on notice.
I'm just kidding. And again, that is really actually in the large scheme of things a small thing.
Yeah, but
it would be really cool to have
it would be cool.
Your collection of recipes that you made at the end.
Sure, but when you are in the higher player counts and you need those discards reshuffled, I get it. So I understand both sides of that coin. I do think just in the, and we didn't really talk about this, but in the base game, there's so much stuff. Like the replayability is high.
Oh, yes.
There's lots of different ingredients. There's lots of different travelers. The location deck, you only see two per game. And so you have lots of different locations that you can go to, which means you have all kinds of end of round abilities to look at and different beginning of round abilities to have. So I love the replayability in this game. I think it's very high.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I mean, the locations you can go to, the trips you can go to are also all real places, all themed accurately.
That's right.
So that's, again, plays into the theme of the game really well.
Yep. And the expansions that you mentioned earlier, they're more stuff expansions.
Yeah.
You get more recipes, more travelers, more locations, and they are themed. So there's like a media one, which focuses on different content creators in the board gaming space.
Like real content creators.
Yeah.
So you can see how many you recognize when you buy that expansion,
right.
Which is kind of fun.
That's right. You immediately pulled out Rodney and you're like, oh, look, here's Rodney from Watch It Play. And I was like, yep, that's right.
Yeah. You recognized like... I feel like there's only maybe one or two that you didn't recognize from that whole stack, which is kind of fun.
It's a cool crew.
Yeah. And then the team expansion has families that you're catering to, which is fun.
Yeah. No, there's some cool stuff in the little mini expansions. And just another aesthetic thing, they come in seed style packs.
Yeah.
So it looks like you're buying seed packets when you buy your expansions, which is cool. The other expansion thing is you can upgrade your components. So the game already has some quality components in that the cardboard is nice and thick for most of the components that you would be replacing. For all the player tokens, they're already wooden, but you can upgrade the ingredients and the source tokens to be wooden tokens as well, which we did. I really enjoy that. I love the quality of them. They were very nice, easy to hold, easy to work with. So I understand that's an added expense, but I was happy I did it.
So Jared mentioned briefly the entry point. There is a low entry point for this game.
Yep.
You can learn it incredibly quickly. Now, your first setup might take a little bit. There's quite a few things to set up. You have to divide out your ingredients, set up your rows of cards, set up your player board, that kind of thing. It's going to take a little bit of space You're going to want...
It does have a footprint.
A pretty big table.
No airline tray table.
Yeah. And so I'm thinking about somebody coming in and seeing, oh my goodness, there's this track and these ingredients and this board and this board and this board. It might feel overwhelming at the start. So that's a good thing to be aware of if you're inviting your foraging non-gamer, hadn't set foot in a living room because they've been camping for 6 months. You know, nice. Like if you're inviting those people, just be aware of that reaction that they might have seeing this huge game on this table. And you just need to reassure them. No. We're just going to go on a foraging trip. It's going to be really fun.
Yep.
Appreciate the artwork. Tell me if you've found any of these things and if you want to, if you've made any of these recipes, whatever. Anyway, because it is a very low entry point. Mm-hmm. Now, I will say that once you get into the game, just be aware that the game it's not a short game for it being a low entry point. It's not a super long game. We're not talking like you need to reserve a whole afternoon, but you should reserve an hour.
I think 45 minutes to an hour is fair.
45 minutes to an hour for it.
I think it's going to clip a little bit faster once you really know the game. But it's in that 45 to an hour space.
And if you have players that get overwhelmed by a lot of options, that's something to be aware of too, because you do have a variety of spaces you can move to, a variety of recipes you can make and people that you can talk to. And so if you've got people that have a little bit of AP, that is analysis paralysis.
Yep.
Where they get overwhelmed by having a lot of options and trying to figure that out. That is a possibility with this game that might make it take longer. Or if you get overwhelmed by people that are kind of intimidated by stacking abilities, like, oh, I've got to buy this recipe to then attract this person. That's something to be aware of as well. But I think also with those people, the flexibility is going to make them feel like, okay, I haven't totally messed everything up if I don't stack it right.
Yeah.
There's going to come another opportunity later on the road. So anyway, just wanted to mention those for all the people that you want to invite to play this game with you.
No, I love it. All right. Price point. MSRP for this game is $70. And I found it on Game Nerds for $49.97.
Wow.
I think
everybody find it on Game Nerds for $49.97?
Absolutely.
Wow.
I think at $50, this game's a steal.
That is a complete steal.
I had no problem paying MSRP for this or whatever. I can't remember what discount we got for going through Kickstarter, but I don't even think I'd be upset at $70. I think the art is so good. The components are awesome. The gameplay is great. Very happy with the price point for this game for what you get in the box.
I completely agree. Yeah, when you saw 70, I was thinking that is a perfectly reasonable.
Yeah.
Yeah, for the artwork and the components. And $50, man, somebody needs to really take advantage of that before everybody realizes that this game is actually worth a lot more than that.
All right. Let's jump into grading and final thoughts. Anna, this game was purchased with you in mind, so you get to go first.
I mean, I don't... There's no points deducted. I have to give it an A+.
Wow.
I have to.
Even with your massive complaint...
Well, the fact that I called it a massive complaint was slightly a joke.
Oh, I see.
I do still want my...
Oh, I get it.
...publishable foraging recipe book.
I saw the seriousness on your face.
I desperately want that, but that actually has nothing to do with the gameplay, so I really can't deduct points for the game not doing something that it wasn't asked to do. I think an A+. There's very little... not to like or to be frustrated about or that didn't feel like it worked as we have played through this game. And it was a lot of fun and beautiful. And like you said, felt like a very fun journey along the way. Jared mentioned that he feels like he's bad at this game. And I'll say my attitude the first time we played the game, after I realized, I was like, I'm not even going to think about strategy. I'm just going to have a ton of fun enjoying the artwork, making the recipes, seeing where we're going, and completely enjoyed that game, not even really paying attention to the score track. So very enjoyable from a variety of different perspectives. There you go.
Right on. I think I'm going to give this game an A. I think it's very good at what it is trying to do. I love the artwork. I think they absolutely crushed that. I love the way that the theme interacts with the gameplay itself. I love that it gives me the feel of going on a journey. I wasn't even really looking for that, and I still got it. I was just happy to sit down and have a good time playing a foraging game with you and found myself on this journey, which I thought was cool. I don't really have a lot of complaints about this game. I mean, we've talked in the past about randomness, and I just don't know that it bothers me a whole lot. Even the times where I'm having trouble getting what I need, I'm just kind of like, all right, well, that's just part of it. I just kind of shrug it off. So for what it is, for the weight class that it sits in, I really enjoy it, and I don't have a lot of complaints for it. I don't really want to give the plus on there because, well, in my weird way of looking at things, it wouldn't exist on my non-existent top 10 board game list, but I really enjoy it, and I love that you love it, and I love playing it with you. So I can't get anything lower than that. So it's like up there with one of the highest rated games I've done on the podcast. So it gets high praise for that.
And yet you're surprised by it as you're rating it.
I don't know. I'm not really surprised by it. It's just my own weirdness of trying to figure out how to stack different games in my mind of priority.
Yeah,
but
that makes sense.
I think it's an A. Absolutely.
Well, and you've got to be aware that for some people, the nature theme just isn't going to grab you.
Yeah. And we've talked, Ian and I have talked about that in the past, about how there's just so many nature games.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this has, it has a few unique theme things to it of the making the friends. The foraging thing is still relatively new in the true gamery games. So I think it can stand out that way. But I am nervous that it's going to just blend in with the other nature games out there. And I would love for it to be able to stand apart because I think it is a good game.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I'm just wondering if that might be another reason to give it an A as opposed to an A plus for you. And that's something I think it's important for listeners to be aware of, too, is because, I mean, games are so themed nowadays that if you're not getting into the theme, you're not going to enjoy the game as much.
I think that's right.
And if your theme is more like you want survival games or more cutthroat player interaction games, mm-hmm. or... I mean, and this one has player interaction, but you're in a garden foraging. It doesn't feel very cutthroat even when you're having the player interaction.
Sure.
So I think theme might be a part of scoring it slightly lower for you.
Yeah, but I also want to be fair to let it stand on its own merits and not let the hobby dictate for this game, if that makes sense. So it's a weird give and take, but all in all, a very roundabout way of saying it's an A. Great job to the Rose Gauntlet team. And, you know, I think all of our listeners are A+, as long as we're talking about rating. So that's my really great transition to our outro here.
Oh.
So all of my A plus listeners and my A plus wife, thank you for being here.
Aw, you're welcome.
If you have feedback or want to give us your thoughts on the game, we would love to hear from you. Links to our socials are in the description. If you don't like socials, I totally get it. Check us out at our website at thegametablepodcast.com. Shoot us an email at thegametablepodcast@gmail.com or find us on BoardGameGeek. 5-star reviews, subscribing to your podcast player of choice, following us on socials, and joining the conversation on Discord. All of these heroic actions are immensely helpful in growing this podcast. Special thanks to Angie Santiago for her cover art, to Anna Snyder, who made the intro and outro music, and to Alexi Chistolin for the How to Play background music. Join us next week as Ian and I head back over to the feature table. In the meantime, may your dice rolls and your card draws be blessed, and your experiences at the table be ones to remember forever.